Weird Al Yankovic, Sarah Watkins, Doug Benson, Ahmed Best, Janina Gavankar, Busy Phillips, Open Mike Eagle, the composer of Rogue One, Michael Giacchino, and even more people are going to be performing at the Join the Resistance Star Wars themed book release / benefit for Public Counsel, a nonprofit organization who provides pro bono legal services to underrepresented communities in Los Angeles. This is also a celebration of the new book that Ben Acker and I wrote called Star Wars Join the Resistance. It's the first in a series, and it's Star Wars canon. It's about a bunch of kids who join the resistance against the First Order. As I said, Weird Al, Doug Benson, this is going to be a super fun show. Our pal Matt Gourley of Super Ego wrote a song years ago called Stormtroopers Are People Too, and we're going to be doing some stuff with that. It's going to be a lot of fun. March 8th at Largo at the Coronet. Go to largo-la.com for details. We hope you can join us for what will be a fun evening and a good cause.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Today's episode was recorded at ATX Television Fest. Were you there? It was the best, right? Were you not there? Why weren't you there? Season 6 badges are now on sale. That's for next year. You don't want to miss this. They've already got some amazing things cooking. Go to atxfestival.com. Get your Season 6 badges there. Also, they're putting up video versions of all of the podcasts that I'll be releasing and all of the panels and stuff. Some that I won't be releasing. Go to atelevisionexperience.com, atelevisionexperience.com, and you can see the video version of this and many other panels and events that happened at ATX this year. Hope to see you in 2017.
My name is Henry Goldblatt. I'm the editor-in-chief of Entertainment Weekly, and I am a Shondaland addict. And they sent me to rehab once. It didn't take, fortunately. But I am so thrilled to be here to introduce Betsy Beers, who is the executive producer of Grey's Anatomy, of Scandal, How to Get Away with Murder, The Catch, and their newest show, Still Starcross, which premieres later this year on ABC. I've had the pleasure of getting to know Betsy a little bit over the past year or so, and I can tell you by the end of this panel, I promise you, you are going to adore her as much as the characters on her shows. So this is how it's going to work. We are doing, Betsy and I are just going to have 3 rounds of drinks. And I'm going to be super, super friendly afterwards. And we've chosen the drinks to honor the leading ladies of Shondaland. And the hitch is the more rounds we do, the tougher the questions for Betsy get. So without further ado, are you guys ready?
Yes!
I'd like to introduce Betsy Beers.
I agreed to this in the middle of the night. I was on set in Spain shooting our new show, and my wonderful publicist sent me an email and said, there's this thing, and I'm just reading it really because I'm looking at the monitor, and there are all these beautiful period-dressed people in front of me, and it's like 4 in the morning, and I've been up for many days straight. And the email said, oh, there's something great with Henry, and I love Henry. And I was like, oh, I love Henry. And it's in Austin. I'm like, I love Austin. This is great. And I didn't read the whole email. So I said, oh, that's great. I'm going to do this. Sounds really great. And then it turns out that actually it involved large amounts of alcohol. So watch this.
Speaking of barkeep, please.
Yeah.
Thank you. Will you please introduce yourself?
I'm Finchie. Hi.
And Finchie, what do you do?
I am a writer on Grey's.
Well, Cheers.
Cheers. Yeah. Oh, this would be vodka and soda.
In honor of Annalise.
In honor of Annalise. And I've had too much coffee today. Because I don't know about this people, you people in Austin, but you drink so much coffee that I'm literally like, what the hell? It's an amazing place. Alcohol and coffee. Best place ever.
We are starting with, these are the simple questions. These are the questions that they ask the interns on Grey's Anatomy. So, so we're going to start real simple. What does an executive producer do?
Okay, well, there are lots and lots of different kinds of executive producers. There are executive producers who write, and the show's creator is usually an executive producer, and they, obviously, Shonda Rhimes is an executive producer. She created Grey's Anatomy. She writes Grey's Anatomy, and that means that she's the showrunner, head showrunner. What I do is I'm a non-writing executive producer, which means I'm competent or questionably competent, but theoretically competent. I'm competent to do everything but write, direct, or act, or technically edit, which means I can fill in the gaps whenever the EP, the creator of the shows, the writers or the creative team need help. So I'm available pretty much to do absolutely anything.
A jack of all trades.
A jack of all trades, exactly, which means, you know, kind of good at everything. It's like a cocktail party. It's like when you just have enough information to get through a conversation, and then if somebody questions you too much, you sort of screw it up. That's sort of what I do.
I think you're being a little modest. I want everyone to know a bit about your background. You produced a film called 200 Cigarettes, which starred really a whole bunch of nobodies. It was like Ben Affleck and Dave Chappelle, Guillermo Diaz, Kate Hudson, Paul Rudd. What's your favorite story from that film?
Courtney Love,
yeah. Nobody's.
They went on to just nothing. It was a big group of jokes.
Yeah.
Weirdly, one of my favorite stories is it involves Guillermo Diaz, who I met on that movie. And just small factoid, I had not seen since we shot the movie until we auditioned him for Scandal. And he came in, and it was this amazingly amazing reunion, and I got to tell him he got the part.
No, there's no drink shaming here. You take it as you want it.
Thank you. So, that's good. No drink shaming. So basically, one night, and the thing about 200 Cigarettes was it was literally like 35, 36 days straight in the streets of New York. We shot almost all nights. We had, I think, 2 days of day shooting, then it was all nights. And it was a low-budget movie, and it was pretty understaffed, so we ended up sort of doing everything. And when I mean everything, it's like I helped design sets. I was running around doing things I shouldn't have been doing, clearly. And we had this moment where Angie Featherstone, who was also in the movie, was supposed to get a shot of her in a cab driving away. And she had this very carrot red hair that was in the cab, which is how you knew it was Angie Featherstone. And we'd screwed up the schedule, and Angie Featherstone couldn't be there. She had to get on a plane and leave. And so we all looked at each other, and I said, all right, I will dye my hair carrot red. Yeah, you guys, you want to be a producer. This job sometimes sort of sucks. But I said, no, I'm going to take one for the team. I'm going to dye my hair red. I'm going to get in the cab, and you can shoot me from behind. It's totally fine. And Guillermo, God bless him in his cotton socks, who already had weird dyed hair for the movie, said, don't worry, I'll do it. So if you go look at 200 Cigarettes, there's a shot of Angie Featherstone would have been
great. That would have been amazing.
But Angie Featherstone from behind, and it's not. It's Guillermo.
In a wig. Perfect.
It's pretty awesome.
They trained him well for Scandal.
We didn't have him kill anybody.
How did you meet Shonda Rhimes, and what was your first impression of her?
I met Shonda Rhimes in around 2002, and I was working at my old job, which was for Mark Gordon, who's a producer, and we were just starting to get into television, and we were looking at writers and looking for people who wanted to develop TV shows with us, and Shonda had also recently made a deal with ABC Studios, which was then, I think, called Touchstone, and somebody had suggested to us that she come in and meet with us because she was looking for a producer to produce her television shows, and we were looking for a writer to write a television show. So it was a good natural match. And she came in, and it was one of those things where almost immediately we got along. And you guys know Shonda, certainly, we're very different. She's from the Midwest. I'm from New York. She was very well-spoken and very quiet and very, very, very intelligent.
And you're not quiet.
And I'm not quiet at all, as you can see. But we immediately hit it off. We just started talking about things that we had in common, what we liked, literary tastes. And we found we had a lot of sort of crossover areas and really, really enjoyed each other. And so pretty much from that moment on, we decided we wanted to develop. And that first year, we worked on a pilot together that she wrote that was about war correspondence. And we had a really, really good time working together. Our working styles really meshed. We sort of have the same sense of humor in a lot of ways. And so the next year, we decided to do it again. And she had always thought about going to med school. She almost went to med school. And in talking about trying to come up with an idea for a show to sell to then Touchstone and ABC The Network, we came upon the idea of a medical show, and that's where Grey's Anatomy comes from. I was, right? Amazing. That isn't it good she wanted to be a doctor, you guys, and she knew what the hell a surgeon was? Because I was totally in the dark. And I literally said, when she said, like, you know, medical shows, this would be great, I said, I don't understand medical shows. I don't understand what they're doing. They're always running around and yelling stat and putting paddles on people, and somebody's got to explain what the hell these people do. And she said, dude, there are these things called interns, and you can, like, the interns don't know what they're doing. And I'm like, okay, so I'm like an intern. And so it worked out well. It worked out well.
You've auditioned hundreds and hundreds of actors over the years. What's your favorite audition story?
I think I may have talked to you about this, but there are a bunch. I mean, it's one of the best things about the jobs is auditioning, weirdly, not for the actors, who I feel very bad for, that they have to come into these rooms and do what they have to do. Very often they have to do take after take after take, and it's really, really, really hard work. But there was, for Scandal, Katie Lowes came in to read for the role of Quinn. And one of the things Linda Lowy, our genius casting director, does is very often when somebody comes in for another pilot or another show and it doesn't work out, we end up bringing them in for something else. And Katie Lowes, we originally met because she came in for us on a show called Off the Map. And she came really, really close to, yay, Off the Map, right? So she came in on Off the Map, and we loved her on Off the Map. She just didn't end up being right for the role. So Linda brought her in for Scandal for the role of Quinn, and we knew it immediately. It was one of those things where she comes in and starts, and Sean and I just look at each other and go, okay, we might as well just take our toys and go home. Mm-hmm. The normal procedure, for those of you who don't know, is essentially what we do is we audition the person, you tape them, you do a test deal, and then the network in the studio, you view it officially, and there's a whole brouhaha process that goes on. And the network in the studio all agreed that, indeed, we didn't have to audition anybody else. She was the person. But we didn't let her know that. So we brought her in, and she thought she was coming in for another audition. And Shonda said, we brought you in here because we wanted to talk to you. And she immediately got that expression that actors get when they want to jump off a bridge because they think they didn't get the part. And she went, uh-huh. And Shonda said, we just wanted to bring you in to say you're not going to be doing the taping, the test taping. And she went, uh-huh. And Shonda said, because you got the part. And we were taping it. Because we are evil, evil human beings. So actually, you can see it on tape. But it's one of the most amazing things I've ever seen, because she was, you could see, like, all the expressions of, like death and dying, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross going across her face, but backwards. So she went from this sort of like, it's okay, I'm just going to take my toys and go home, it's really fine, to, oh my God, to, oh my God, to tears, to tears and tears, to running up to each of us and hugging us and making the, I would say, slightly unfortunate statement that this was the best thing that ever happened to her in her life. Oh. And she just got engaged. So I think, you know, it speaks for itself.
Are there any other actors or actresses who've come in for multiple parts and they just weren't right until you found the right role for them, the correct role for them?
That actually happens a lot. One of the things that happens a lot in Shondaland is that we meet actors and we love them and they just don't happen to work out perfectly for a part. And we met Kevin McKidd way before he was cast as Owen Hunt. He came in, and I think we met him for general, or we were looking sort of generally for a couple of different parts for him. And we couldn't find exactly the right thing until she created the role of Owen, and then it was really, really clear that that was right for Kevin. I think Capshaw, actually, Jessica Capshaw, was the one that maybe some people know, but Jessica came in for Nurse Rose. And if you guys are Grey's Anatomy fans, remember Nurse Rose was a nurse who Derek had a brief relationship with, and it didn't end up really going anywhere, and Nurse Rose ended up, yeah, exactly. Nurse Rose ended up going to probably another hospital, is my guess. But and then she's probably got a fantastic job. She's probably a doctor.
But somewhere in Chicago.
Exactly. Yeah. She's probably on like Chicago Med.
She may be. She very well may be. Yeah.
Maybe she like totally crossed networks. That would be super awesome.
Either that, or we're going to break some news right now that you're doing a spinoff with Nurse Rose.
That would be super
awesome.
Stop
the presses.
She could really exactly. So Jessica came in for Nurse Rose, and she did a chemistry read with Patrick because she knew, and it was really, really fun. We had a really, really good time, and we fell in love with Jessica Capshaw. And Shonda looked at me and she was just like, I don't think she's Nurse Rose, but she's just the best. And what Shonda does in these situations is she looks at Linda Lowy, our genius casting director, and she says, will you put a pin by her? Just put a pin by her. And then we have this sort of list of people like that, and then as characters start to come up, Shonda goes back and thinks, you know, there was that woman that we read for Nurse Rose, and she was terrific. So what happened was when she started thinking about the character of Arizona, one of the things I remember the clearest is she kept talking about the fact that she would have those rollers in her sneakers because she was for peds, and that she had a little teddy bear on her jacket, and she was like, it's Jessica Capshaw. It's got to be Jessica Capshaw. So that's how that came about.
And we love Arizona, so we're happy that Jessica Capshaw is playing
her.
She's
the best.
She's absolutely the best.
She's the best.
We're going to get to that. We'll put a pin in that, because we're going to get to that a little later. What is the show that's on right now that you love and say, damn, I wish that was a Shondaland show?
What do you guys think? Oh, damn. Wait, I'm supposed to answer it.
Quantico.
You know what? I think for me, it would probably be, weirdly, okay, it would be a comedy. I mean, like, I'm thinking comedy because we really, really want a comedy on the air. I think I love Master of None. I mean, I love Master of None. Like, I think that show is incredible. And I feel like, weirdly, that's a show I look at and I really, really, really wish we made.
So what are the, unfortunately, you had a show in development, a comedy in development that didn't get picked up this year, but what are the qualities you look for in a Shondaland comedy?
I think it's very similar to when we're doing a Shondaland drama, which is, I think you want complicated, interesting characters who have twisty lives. We love workplace family drama and comedy. So I think very often a combination of family and workplace is always really kind of fun. And it's real natural human behavior. I don't think we're fantastical really in the comedy as much as we would be pretty realistic and grounded. And one of the really fun things about the comedy that we just did, Toast, which unfortunately currently is Toast, because they didn't pick it up, but it was a really, really fun experience, is it was actually working in front of a live audience, which because we do drama, we don't get to do, and this was a hybrid, so we got to watch the actors work in front of a live audience, which was super cool.
How about an episode of How to Get Away with Murder in front of a live audience? Can we make that happen? on the flip side, is there what's the best pitch that you heard that you like, in retrospect, you're like, oh, I wish we had picked that up?
Damn.
That's a positive question.
Thank you. Take a pass on that because I got to think about that.
We ready for a second round?
They're very sure. Do you want to move to the second round?
I think we're ready to move to the second round. Okay. You got an A+ on the first round.
Did I do okay?
Yeah, you passed the intern exam.
I didn't suck.
Oh boy.
You guys did a terrible job.
And cheers.
Cheers. Okay, I took a big old ass slop.
Red wine, of course, for Olivia Pope.
Yes, and this was...
That was vodka for Annalise Keating. The questions start to get a little more difficult now. Are you ready?
I am.
Great. Shondaland shows are known for the biggest plot twists. What is the biggest plot twist that got the biggest, boldest reaction at a table read?
Oh, that's actually easy. Well, actually, it's not easy. It's usually Scandal, because Scandal gets the biggest burst of screams, because we have a cast on Scandal who are rabidly enthusiastic. The best way I can put it, and the table reads are rapidly enthusiastic.
Oh, do you
want to? It's a little bit like, oh, whoops.
It's a little bit, I was having such a good time gesticulating, you guys. It's a little bit like a revival meeting. Like, the table reads are like a revival meeting. It's the best way I can describe it. And I do the stage directions for the table read, which is one of my favorite things in the world to do. And Shonda likes to put in lots of, like, long, complicated love scene descriptions to totally screw with my head, with lots of details and stuff. And then they put songs in that I have to sing. And it's really, it's super sadistic. But I think it was probably end of season two. The last line of that episode was Dad. If you remember, she finds out that Rowan's her, it's like we find out that Rowan is her father. And I remember this table read very carefully because, of course, I knew it was coming. Josh Molina, who always turns to the last page to see if he's still in the show.
God bless him.
Which he does. I mean, I'm really, he like, you see him flipping. We're like, don't flip, Josh. Don't flip. The cast didn't know. A couple of people knew. That was it. And we got to the last page, and I couldn't even get to the stage directions because Carrie said Dad. And the only way I can describe it is everybody got up and started screaming and running around the table. I have to say, second to that was probably Meredith and Riggs this year, because nobody at the table read, with the exception of a couple of people, knew that that was coming. And because of the way it was framed, was like super surprising, because they're fighting, it's like super good. And that was, watching the expression of some of the cast who didn't have any idea that it was happening was pretty good. There was no running around the table. However, Grays is not a run around the table kind of group.
What are some of the stage directions that Shonda puts in just to mess with you?
Well, the writers like to put in songs they know I'm not going to be able to sing. So that's super irritating. Like, they started with, like, the kind of, oh, what a beautiful morning stuff. Because every time, actually, when we do scene descriptions, when a new day comes around now, they always put a song in. So there was, like, there have been tributes to different artists, which have really been problematic for me. So then I try to talk through it, and then they won't let me. But then Shonda will write, he pushes her up against a wall. All that sort of, like, it's hottie, hot, hot. And the hotness we can't show to the American viewing public how hot the hotness is. And then we leave them as he goes out of frame with the hottie hotness. And it's a lot of hottie hotness. And
I'm just getting turned on.
Aren't you?
To
it's
yeah,
just
it's
like,
a little
just the beverage is like, exactly. It's fun, though. It's like, I always have a really, really good time. Those table reads are really fun.
Share with us a plot from one of the shows that has been left on the cutting room floor.
You know what I'm going to say? Is very, very little gets left on the cutting room floor because we believe in recycling.
You're at green over at Shondaland.
We're so green. We shoot a lot of stuff. We shoot a lot of footage, as we've got writers who work on the show here can attest to. And especially on Scandal, I think we shoot lots of different storylines, and sometimes that stuff doesn't end up in the show. Very often on Scandal, I think the areas that get eliminated initially are the sort of subplots sometimes that have to do with, there was one plot last season that had to do with, I think there was probably a Quinn and Huck. There was some Quinn and Huck stuff. But normally, honestly, what she does is she doesn't leave it out. It comes back. And it sort of reintegrates itself. The other thing is, we don't tend to cut out whole storylines for the most part. What we tend to do is what we call shaving, which is you take the storyline and you shave it down to the best of your ability. So the storyline still exists, but it doesn't exist in the entirety in which it was shot. So when in doubt, shave it out. Don't cut it out.
And be green.
And be green, because we're not wasting as much by the shaving and the recycling.
Which of the shows that you have on the air right now has taken the most surprising turn from where it started from?
You know what? All of them. I mean, maybe Grey's less, because it's been on so long and there have been so many twists and turns. And I think it's still the show it started out as, which is It's about a hospital and a group of people who are learning how to be people and learning how to do their jobs. And this structure of the show has certainly stayed the same. I think Scandal certainly has. I mean, I think Scandal this season certainly went in an amazingly delightful direction.
What was it like on set with Olivia beating the bejesus out of the vice president in the chair?
I was unfortunately not there that day, but I'm just going to imagine that it was a zesty fun fest.
I want to talk spinoffs for a second. You had a very successful one with Addison in Private Practice. Mm-hmm. Are there characters, current characters you look at and you're like, you know what, they could hold their own show?
All of them. I mean, seriously, I think almost any character that Shonda or Pete or Alan or now Heather creates, I think, and it's probably early for Still Starcrossed, I think we probably should get on the air.
Yeah, just
it's like, wait, there's a spinoff before we have a show. That sounds like a great idea. I think really there are a number of them. They're all my kids, and I love them, so I can't kind
Fair
of
Fair enough. Is it something that you and Shonda talk about?
Spinoffs not on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the great thing about Private Practice is that Private Practice really organically, and I think a spinoff would have to kind of organically come out of something, but Private Practice came organically out of the idea that she thought it would be really, really fun to take Addison, who was the less viable third of that triangle, and by the time Addison sort of exited from Grey's Anatomy, Shonda wanted new challenges for the character. So I think it was a situation where it made a lot of sense to send Addison to California to start a new life because we all wanted to see what Addison did next. We just knew that Addison probably wasn't doing it at Seattle Grace. So I think it would have to be really organic. It would have to feel really organic for the character.
You talked about this earlier a bit, about the culture on various sets. You said Scandal, sort of the dance around the table type of set. Mm-hmm. Grey's a little more subdued. Tell us about the differences in some of the set culture.
I think they're all sort of, I mean, Scandal's very funny. They seem to crack each other up a lot, and they run around to keep their energy up, but they're also very intense. And what they've said to me is there's a different energy between the White House and the OPA, like when you're shooting. It's just you get at the White House and you get very presidential. I think there's that sort of happens. I think Grey's is very efficient. I think they still have fun, but it's very efficient. They've been doing it for a long time. Everybody gets along and has a good time, but it's a real, they've really got a system going. I think the younger shows, there's sort of more, they're more surprises because we're still trying to figure out what we're doing. So The Catch is really, it's been really, really fun, and working with Murray and with Peter has been really fun. But that's also a show where I think the energy and the tone's different in the two different sets because you have the business side and then you have the con side. And when they started to cross over by the end, it got really, really fun to watch them integrate. How to Get Away with Murder is just, I think it's intense. I mean, it's intense, and the kids are really funny, and Viola's actually very, very funny. But so often they're dealing with these intense courtroom scenes and lots of death. That I think it probably.
The show's called How to Get Away with Murder.
Oh, damn, right.
Yeah.
God, I never put that together. Thanks so much for that, Henry.
Anytime.
God, I should check the title next time I look at that stuff. I got to tell you, though, you guys, the person I always felt the most sorry for in How to Get Away with Murder was Tom Verica, who played Sam, who spent three quarters of the season lying in a big pool of blood. And he had to do it over and over and over again, which I found hysterically funny. Just because I would go, how's that going today, Tom? What are you doing? Going through your shot list for going back to direct on Scandal? How's that going? Yeah.
You mentioned Murray. You mentioned Peter. You have impeccable taste in leading ladies and leading men. What actors out there would you like look at and you're like, wow, I'd love to build a show around him or her?
George Clooney. George Clooney would be really great. I loved working with Gina Davis. I thought Gina Davis was amazing. I would kill to work with Gina Davis again. I think that would be really, really great. I'll think about some more, but that come on, you guys. Isn't George Clooney ready for a show?
George Clooney, you heard it here first.
Exactly. Well, he started in TV, you know?
Exactly.
It's sort of a nice sort of cycle. It'd be kind of cool.
Exactly.
I'd also actually, I really like to work. There are people like, Carol Burnett and Dick Van Dyke and, like, people I grew up with watching, Mary Tyler Moore, that I'd love to get an opportunity to work with just because they formed my view of television. And it's I have a lot of respect for the people who sort of worked their way up through over the years and are such phenomenal talents and actors. So I think we had Rita Moreno on, and I practically lost my lunch. I was so excited. I mean, I was...
Yeah, who else do you get starstruck by when they appear? Gina Davis, you mentioned, or Rita Moreno. When they appear as guest stars on the show, you're like, wow.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you probably the one that screwed me up the most, which is... was William Daniels, because I don't know if you guys remember, but he was on St. Elsewhere, and I loved St. Elsewhere, like with every inch of my life. And by the way, you guys, he also played the voice of Kit on Knight Rider. And the TV guy called him the busiest man in show business that year, which they did, because he was very, very busy. And I loved him so much on St. Elsewhere, like I loved him so much that... and he was like, he did theater, he did like 1776, he was like, so, but weirdly, like, I've gone up to almost every person, like Faye Dunaway, like all these people that we've worked with, and the amazing people that we've had in Scandal, and I've had no issue, but for some reason, I was so excited by the fact that it was like William Daniels. I became absolutely tongue-tied, and I think it was a nice issue for jokes way later on, which is really, you just could have gone up and said hello, like, instead of like cowering the corner over your chicken salad like a loser.
So circle around, basically you want to build a show around William Daniels. That would be your ideal.
Exactly. Thanks for answering.
No problem. Network executives, you've heard it here first.
Exactly. William Daniels, please.
Nice.
It's absolutely.
Are we ready for another drink?
I think you're moving to Scotch.
I am moving to Scotch.
And I'm moving to tequila.
Yeah, to honor some Grey's Anatomy folks.
That's correct.
Yes.
I think it's the Grey's Anatomy round.
Finchie? Let's have a round of applause for Finchie.
Finchie's most excellent, by the way.
Did I get yours?
I love me. You know what you did?
I did. That's okay. We'll switch.
I was like, I don't like scotch, but
yeah,
you know what?
I don't like tequila.
I really like that scotch.
Yeah, we're going to switch.
By the way, I have no communicable disease right now.
I may have three or four. It's not clear.
That's good. That's all good.
And yes, we have a little treat for the audience. Mm. And speaking of communicable diseases.
This is delicious. What did you guys get? Did you get wine?
They're getting wine.
I'm going to say the tequila is delightful.
Speaking of communicable diseases, I want to play a little game.
Oh, please. I can hardly wait.
It's a family-friendly audience.
I'm just going to say something.
Yeah.
You know, at 2:30 in the afternoon, even one big slurp of red wine and a big slurp of vodka and now like 18 sips of... Dude... I just discovered I'm not a daytime drinker.
And this is where it gets fun.
This is when I start tossing my hair a lot. See?
I have always wanted hair to toss. It
right?
Never happened for
the
me.
The main reason I have it is just to toss the shit.
Never happened. You have great hair. All right. We're going to play a little game we like to call F, Marry, or Kill.
Okay.
So, and again, I want to be super, super clear. We are talking about the characters on your show. We are not talking about your feelings about any of the actors whatsoever. But we're going to go through some of the shows, and I'm going to give you three characters, and you have the choice of F, Marry, or Kill.
Okay.
And for this exercise, let's all be gender fluid, and if you want to F a woman, that's fine.
That's totally fine.
No, man,
and just
fine.
Apologies to my husband who's here. Sorry, honey.
Let's start with Grey's Anatomy. We've got Owen, Arizona, and Joe. I told you I'd get back to Arizona.
Okay, so Owen, Arizona, and Joe. I'm telling you guys, like, bleh. Okay, so Owen, I would marry. Arizona, I'd fuck. So I have to kill Joe.
So you have to kill Joe, okay. And all fair, you know, Joe's not been behaving well anyway. She's been lying and stuff, so...
I'm a little worried about Joe.
Yeah, I would agree
and you know
to
how
offer.
I feel about Alex.
Yeah.
I'm like, Alex is my... Yeah,
exactly. So I get that. All right, next one may be a little tougher. Scandal. Abby, Cyrus, and Huck.
I'd marry Abby.
I'd fuck Huck and I'd kill Cyrus. Yeah. Right, you guys? Yeah. Like, do you guys agree with me?
Yes.
I'm telling you, the tequila is amazing. The red wine wasn't. How do you like the red wine? Not bad. Okay. It's just a good panel, see?
Yeah. No other panel's going to get you one. And get,
exactly.
Get you all
They're not doing this on like a showrunner panel. Come on, man.
All right, from How to Get Away with Murder, we're going to go with the kids, Connor, Wes, and Asher.
You guys. Connor, Wes, and Asher. Okay. I'd marry Wes. I'd fuck Connor. And I'd kill Asher.
Yeah. For every right answer, Betsy gets another sip. We've got the catch now. Ben, Danny, and Margo.
I want to fuck all of them. I can't?
No, you can't. Those aren't the rules.
I hate you and your rules.
When no, you get, I'm really bad at that.
You get
way.
All Ruly McRulester on me.
That's my Shondaland name, McRulester.
You are McRulester, exactly. You're so McRulester. You just sunk your own boat, dude. Okay, so Ben. Who's Ben?
Ben, Danny?
Danny,
and Margo.
Okay, so I would probably marry Ben, fuck Danny, and kill Margo. Mm-hmm.
You're going to marry...
Is that good?
You're going to marry Ben after what he did?
Yeah, no, totally. Have you seen Ben recently? Have you seen Ben? Have you just, I don't know, laid your freaking eyes on Ben recently? Henry. By the way, Henry, yeah. What would you do of those three? Who would you kill, marry, or fuck? I'm turning around, you guys.
Fair enough.
I'm taking back this damn panel.
I think Danny's just the cutest.
He's adorbs, isn't he?
Yeah, I would marry Danny. I'd F Ben, and I guess Margo's dead.
She's dead, right?
She's dead. She has to be.
Oh, wait. I've been saying fuck. Should I just say
no,
F?
You can say okay. Fuck. It's fine.
I forgot to check the panel rules before I showed up. And anybody who knows me, you know me. I mean, anybody who knows me knows, unfortunately, I have a potty mouth, so.
I'm a dainty gentleman.
You are. You're so lovely.
All right. And you knew this one was coming. Olivia, Meredith, and Annalise.
Thanks, Lynette. Oh, I'm going to have to abstain from that one. I just can't. I can't. I like...
Drink more, then answer.
Who said drink more? I love you. I know, exactly. I will marry tequila. I will...
Oh, good. Yeah, let's do this.
I'll marry tequila.
Yeah.
I will probably F red wine.
Mm-hmm.
You kill vodka? I might kill vodka, but I'm really torn. I don't think I can kill vodka. That's the thing. I love vodka.
Well, is that how you feel about Meredith and Annalise and Olivia? Yeah.
No, that's like...
Olivia and Annalise might kill you, in all fairness.
Or maybe they kill each other.
Yeah.
That might be... That's true. What about you guys? Let's take a vote. Vote.
A vote. Who would marry Annalise?
Lynette!
Who would marry Olivia? All right, who would marry Meredith? I guess that's the bulk of the
Meredith,
room.
Yeah. I think everyone agrees that Meredith is marriage.
All right.
Right? I think we all love Meredith as marriage.
So.
I think it's like it's a weird cage match between Olivia and Annalise in terms of...
All right, who are you? Are you effing Olivia?
Yeah.
Oh, poor Annalise.
You know, you could also do it by seasons. Like, this is the great thing about having a couple of seasons of a show.
Exactly.
And maybe there's some seasons where you want to F Meredith, you want to marry...
There was a couple of seasons you'd probably kill Meredith, too. Yeah.
We tried.
She survived. I think it was season three. I think she actually technically died, right? So that totally gets me off the hook. We killed Meredith already. Which means I can both fuck and marry the other two, too.
Amazing.
This is genius. My brain's so big on tequila.
Amazing.
Who knew?
Pete Norwalk, who's the creator, of course, of How to Get Away with Murder, has said, Annalise is partly inspired by you. But I want to know which Shondaland character do you most identify with?
Honey, is it inspired by me? So, I'm sorry, what was the question? Because I was so taken with A, the tequila, B, Henry, and C, clearly myself.
Go ahead. I go by McRulster now.
You are excuse me, McRulster.
Yes. Which Shondaland character do you most identify with? And past or present?
I think that on a very kind of core level, I probably identify with Meredith because there are a lot of things about Meredith that I think from the beginning, there's some certain similarities just historically. And there's something about, I think I said this, but there's something about not knowing what you're doing and knowing how to do it and learning how to do it and learning how to do it with a lot of pressure on you and yet trying to sustain a fair amount of grace. And the way that Meredith tries to build a family and tries to take care of her friends, I aspire towards, I think. So, you know, I probably at my core of the three feel like I identify with Meredith the most, but I honestly identify with Olivia because Olivia... Pardon?
She rocks.
She does. Well, oh, that's nice. She does, right? Like, so I think she super rocks. And so there are periods where I identify with Meredith for all of that. I think Olivia, there's something about being the person who's in charge and who has responsibilities and is trying to juggle all these things and take care of people and handle crises and handle, you know, many different aspects of things. And with an elegance and a grace and a fairness that I think I look at and I say I aspire towards that. And I just think Annalise Keating's badass. Like, I just think she's badass. I mean, I think she fights for justice. I think the thing that I love about Annalise Keating is she's a defense attorney and she tries to get the best trials and cases for her clients. And most importantly, she protects her kids. So maybe the thing all of them have in common is that they tried to take care of the people they love. And that's the thing I think I aspire towards, too. And I think it's one of the most important things about the characters in our show is they really try to... They try to create a families around them, and then they try to protect the people around them to the best of their ability.
How about a round of applause for that? These people create great, great television.
You guys, and that's half in the bag. Think about what I would have said if I was sober. Like, it would have been amazing.
The questions are only going to get more difficult from here, too.
Oh, God.
All right, here we go. Eagle-eye viewers know that Jay Jackson plays a newscaster on both Scandal and The Catch. Do they exist in the same universe? And could we expect a crossover of any of your shows?
They may or may not be in the same universe. We thought it would be really fun. And I did not come up with that. That was, I think it was Alan Heinberg. It was either Alan Heinberg or Shonda who thought it might be fun. And I don't know about the same universe. And I don't see any... I haven't heard about any crossover. Nobody's called me about that. But I do sort of like the kind of the weird
synthesis.
Yeah, exactly. That
yeah.
You can kind of pick that out. I think that was certainly really, really fun. And I thought that was a really, really fun touch. No idea about the other question, though.
I was waiting for Derek Shepherd when he was going to be interviewing with the president. I was waiting for the president to be Cheryl Grant.
That would have been awesome. And super weird. Wouldn't that be just super weird? Or if when Fitz got shot, like Meredith was standing there with gloves, it would have been just super weird.
Or with her hand in his stomach and a bomb's about to go off.
No, exactly. That's actually, oh gosh, so many thoughts. Hold on, I'm just going to text somebody really quickly. That's not bad.
No problem. Your shows are obviously known for their cliffhangers. What has been your favorite cliffhanger?
You know, I have a bunch of them. I think that Dad was really, really big for me. I mean, I think that was an amazingly great cliffhanger. I actually love season one cliffhanger of Grey's Anatomy where Addison walks in and says, you know, are you the young lady who's been screwing my husband? I just thought I'll never forget watching reactions to that.
What were the reactions?
Because in those days we watched reactions to that because there was no Tweetsky. So because there was no Twitter and there was no real social media, it would be your friends calling you on the phone while the episode was going, or I don't remember that. I remember back in the olden times, you guys, we had these things called letters, and they had stamps. And we got, like, fan mail, and they would draw pictures of Addison and Derek, and they'd be like, Addison, Derek, forever with a four and a big heart. Do you remember that? It was in the writer's bungalow.
Attic.
That's it. Meg, who is a writer on... You've been a writer for Grays for many, many years now, right? 300. And you look so young. And you're so fresh. I know. But, yeah, like, wow. Yeah, it was a... It's a... Yes.
Yes. when you look at a show like The Catch, which is starting out and had a terrific first season, what type of after it's been on the air, what type of retreating do you do to say, you know, this has worked well, this didn't work well, how can we morph it in the way we want to for season two?
I think it's honestly all about how the writer, the creator of the show, is feeling about the creative. And I mean, many things change as you sort of work and keep going on a show, which, you know, our writers who are here can attest to. But I think you look at all the factors, and it's really determined by the direction that each one of these show creators wants to go. So that's what really does it. I think certain things for them, if they worked, if certain character relationships worked. And on the flip side of that, very often... I think, and you can attest to this too, writers either, you'll start to go in a direction for a season or when a show certainly starts, and you don't think two characters are going to go together. You don't think necessarily, you might think that those two would be romantically linked or might become enemies, and then you start watching the dynamics of the actors, and that starts to really affect what you do. So there have been a couple of cases, you know, certainly across the time where you get an actor who's working with another actor, and all of a sudden you say, oh, my God, they have incredible chemistry.
Oh, give us an example of that.
Oh, Christine and Burke. You know, Christine and Burke, I think we were just starting the show off. Shauna was just starting the show off, and that happened almost immediately. But it was one of those delightful things where two people are in a scene together, and you think, oh, my gosh, they're fireworks here. And, like, this is just the most incredible kind of connection. So that's an example of it working that way. And then I think the shows always grow and change every season because of the stories that the creators really, really want to tell. I think that's the way it's determined.
We've only had one long-running Shondaland show, and as you can tell, now that's getting to me, too. What is the Shondaland series?
By the way, you haven't been sucking down yours as much
I had a little
as
more of the first ones.
That's good. That's true, actually. You did way better on the first ones.
What does the Shondaland series finale look like? Does it tie up all the loose ends, do you think, or is it more of a Sopranos type of cut to black?
I have no idea. I think it's going to really, really depend on the show. I think different shows demand different kinds of finales. I think my feeling, I can't speak for the creators of the shows, but my feeling is I think you want certainly a sense of satisfaction, and you want some questions answered. But, I think it'll all depend on the show, and I think each show will have a very, very different series finale. I mean, I loved the series finale of Private Practice. I was really sad that we'd come to the end of the run, but I loved that because I felt like it was satisfying. You left your characters in a place where you felt confident that they were moving forward in the right direction because those characters had been through so much over the years, and had when we opened on that show, the idea was hitting people at this point in their lives who are at a crossroads, who are not the kids who are interns, but they're people who are just a little bit older who are starting to deal with the really large, real choices in life. Like, should I get married? Should I have a baby? Should I keep going in this path? Should I change jobs? And then we answered that question, because that was one of the questions of the show when we started, was what do you do at this point in your life? And the season finale was, this is what you do. And I hope, I can't speak to what they would be, but I hope they're as satisfying as the Private Practice was to me. And I think they will be, because I think we have amazing writers who do incredible work with us. And I never want to see these shows end.
I was gonna say, hopefully it'll be like by the year 2020,
I will be 8,662 years old, and we will have discovered the cure for death. And I'll still be alive, and I can
Meredith
watch them.
Will be approximately 800 years old.
She will. Yeah. She'll be great. It'll be awesome. It'll all be at a nursing home. It'll literally be Grey's Anatomy. You guys, I'm so clever when I'm wasted.
Preview your new show, Still Starcrossed, for us?
Still Starcrossed is this incredibly fun concept, which actually is based on a YA novel of the same name, and is inspired by that. And the story is, we are set in 16th century Verona, and that's Shakespeare's Verona. And the show takes the position, what happens to the characters in Romeo and Juliet after Romeo and Juliet die? And so it's sort of got a point of view change from what you're normally used to from the Romeo and Juliet story. We pretty much see it from Romeo and Juliet's point of view. But this story is all about the people around them and the lives that get ruined and confused and tossed, upended by the rather adolescent choice of both Romeo and Juliet to off themselves, which, by the way, not smart. And any of you, not wise. If you guys haven't read Romeo and Juliet, I'm really sorry. I ruined it for you.
Spoiler alert from 1600.
Really? And if you haven't, shame on you. But it's really, really fun. And I think a lot of it has to do with the Capulets and the Montagues are at war. Verona is a place which has not seen peace for years. There are warring factions, and what happens when a Capulet relative and a Montague relative are forced into a situation that neither wants any part of? And it's set amidst the family battles and the romance and the incredible costumes and pageantry and fun of that period. So, in short, it's a perfect Shondaland show. It's just with way bigger dresses in a beautiful setting, and it's in another time period.
So we were talking about crossovers earlier. We're definitely going to see a
this
crossover
so
with
awesome.
How to Get Away with Murder, right?
I think totally.
Yeah.
I think that would be so incredibly awesome. That because there's lots of death in Shakespeare.
Exactly.
So what if Annalise Keating came and had to defend, a character from Still Starcrossed? And plus, she would look amazing in one of those dresses.
And Ben can time travel from The Catch and, defraud one of them, perhaps?
Oh, there are all sorts of, those rude mechanics in Shakespeare. The Shylock and the, Falstaff characters, all of whom are clever and funny and steal stuff. That's Ben.
He'd be great.
He could run through the town square and steal people's flagons or chickens or gold bullions or whatever
what
the hell they
is.
Have. A flagon's one of those glasses that they pour liquor in.
Oh.
That was thematic.
Oh, very, very nice.
That was a super thematic thing
Learn
for me to say.
Day. I know. We have time for one or two questions from the audience. Is that okay?
What the hell?
Okay, let's do this. Any questions? In the back on the end.
Hi.
Hi.
You work on so many shows. How do you handle it? Do you ever get to sleep?
I do luckily sleep occasionally, and that works out pretty well for me. What the great thing about this job is that the shows all need different things at different times. So it works out pretty well in that I can be doing different things on different shows, and usually what's necessary isn't duplicative. So also, all the shows are different ages, which means they all sort of need different things. So I always say, Grey's is in college, and they come home to do their laundry, and occasionally if they get a parking ticket, I can take care of that. And the Scandal is probably in high school by now, or so they can drive themselves to school, but they need help picking a college. And, then you kind of keep going, you get the analogy, but it's because I could really belabor it, and we'd be here for 6 hours, and you'd be like, I don't need to hear about you changing diapers, Crystal Starcross.
Well, does the show go through the terrible twos?
Occasionally, yeah. There are moments of the terrible twos, but I think the other thing I can't emphasize enough is I don't do this alone. There are the most amazing group of people who help run these shows. The line producers are incredible. All the different departments who run and work on these shows, who are amazing at their jobs, who keep things going day to day. So when they say it takes a village, it really does take a village. It's an incredible group of people, all of whom really, really do beautiful work and we're really proud to work with. So I do get to sleep because a lot of other people don't.
Anyone else have any questions?
Can
Come on, you guys. You know you want to ask something. Come on.
Really? This shy of an audience? Shauna Land fans usually aren't that shy.
Yeah, I've been up here sucking down alcohol, you guys.
The red wine put them all to sleep. Leslie in the front.
What's the status of the War Correspondence Project? You guys are redeveloping as a movie.
Yeah, we were. Right now, we haven't had actual time to focus on that, but we love that project. I mean, we love that project. We love the world. Shonda's always loved the world, but that's a who knows right now. I sure hope we get to do it, though, because I think it's an incredibly great arena. And that was the initial pilot for that was really fun because the idea was a group of female war correspondents, and it was, we'd never done a pilot before. We'd both come from movies, and we didn't understand that pilots, have these budgets, and that they can't be done on the scale of a movie. So I remember we thought we were very, very clever because Shonda came up with this entire sequence that involved tanks and thousands of extras, and it was a hostage situation. And it was most excellent. This kept happening. And somebody looked at this pilot and said, you know how much money it's going to cost to shoot this pilot? And we're like, no, we don't know. And in fact, I think if we ever looked at it again, we'd probably have to take another look at our ambition in terms of the scale.
$1 million.
Exactly. 60,000 zillion.
In the back. Third row. Yes, you.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
How would you, say your reaction is to some of the sadder, plot lines that you've had, i.e. Mark and Lexi, those? Just from your perspective, how have you reacted to them?
Are you asking me if I cry?
Did you cry?
Yes, I do. They like to say that usually if I cry, it means it's really, really, really upsetting because I've gotten relatively, it's not even that I get inured to it, but it's like I've gotten over the years, you watch something enough that when you watch something enough, if you see different cuts, you don't tend to tear up as often. And what the real test for me is when the finished product comes on, if I'm still crying, then that's usually a sign. I have an inappropriate reaction sometimes to large, shocking moments, which is I laugh hysterically, which I do, which is Shonda finds both bizarre and entertaining, I think. But there have been moments where, somebody will show me something, and all of a sudden I will scream at the top of my lungs and start clapping and jumping up and down, which is not a good reaction to have, mainly because I'm picturing the reaction that people are going to have, and it makes me delighted that we will surprise them. But, yeah, I do cry. I have to say, watching Meredith say goodbye to Derek last year just kills me. That kills me. Christina leaving the last episode with Christina, because, Christina and Meredith are each other's persons, and, it's... I can't still watch that without tearing up. I think Mark Sloan, you're not a person. You have cold ice running through your veins if you don't have that reaction. And I'm just going to say Doc the dog killed me. Just for the record, we did take a dog out. Season 2 of Grey's Anatomy, and that really, 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 really upset me. I know. I love Doc.
Time for one more. The second row here.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
So how did you get into this? Because I kind of want your job.
You don't want my job, you want my tequila. Basically, the short form is I was initially an actor. I went to school, college, moved to New York, and I got in the business, and I started by doing comedy, and I waited on tables, and I did commercials. And I was not a very good actor. I was decent at comedy, but not really even that good at comedy. So when I moved out to Los Angeles in order to pursue my career as a wacky next-door neighbor in a sitcom, which is what I thought I was going to do, in fact, nobody wanted my ass as a wacky next-door neighbor as a sitcom. And very early on, somebody came to me and said, in order to make money, do you want to learn how to read scripts? And I'd had a very fancy education, and I knew how to do book reports, and I'd gotten a degree in English literature, and I'd studied film. So that came actually really easy to me, and
So I started doing coverage, which for those of you who don't know, just is like a book report, and then you basically talk about why you think something could be a movie or it couldn't be a movie. So I started doing that and covering books and covering scripts that way, and I got a job very, very fast doing it full-time at a studio. And I had this sort of like Waterloo moment of, am I going to keep acting or am I going to do the thing which comes much, much easier to me, which is helping other people do incredibly good work as opposed to doing mediocre work alone. And there really was no choice. I mean, I was really enjoying it. So I took the job, and the first movie that I read that I recommended, they decided to make. And it was called I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka. And I got to be like a junior executive on the movie because there were not that many junior executives on the film. So that sort of started my path up. And I, over the years, little by little by little, learned how to produce movies. And so I essentially, my strong suit was always writers and development and sitting and trying to pull the best story out of writers that I could and helping whenever I could and trying to figure out a way to make somebody do the best possible work that they can and make it as easy for them as possible. And that transitioned into getting to work into television, which was actually always kind of my secret love, but nobody knew it. So does that answer the question?
We all love TV because that's why we're here.
That's right, right?
Yes.
This isn't the book festival. We all love books, but we're not here for the book festival.
After three drinks, maybe it's the book festival. I don't know anymore.
Who the hell am I anyway?
I'm not going to put you on the spot and ask you spoilers for the next season, but I will ask you, when do these shows go back in production and what happens next? To give us a little behind-the-scenes look of what happens in the next few weeks.
Basically, right now, all the shows are sort of on slightly different schedules, which is terrific for me. All the shows come back at some point during the summer to start shooting again. So that
writers are working in the meantime?
Writers are working in the meantime. In the case of Grey's, writers start working again, I think, in the beginning of July. How to Get Away with Murder, the writers are back. The Catch, the writers are back. Scandal, the writers will be back soon. And all the shows start, the filming start is staggered. So they're not all starting at exactly the same time, which is excellent. So it's sort of, we roll out over the course of the summer and start. It all sort of depends when you think you're going to be on the air, and that's the way we organize it. We sort of go backwards. But long-winded answer, over the course of the summer, we're rolling out each show in sort of a slightly different pace.
Great. So Grey's Anatomy and How to Get Away with Murder are back this fall.
Yep.
And Scandal and The Catch will be back, and Starcross will be back this winter.
Yes.
Exciting.
You got that really incredibly well.
I know. I'm impressed.
That was very impressive.
Can we have a huge, huge round of applause for Betsy? And a big cheers. Thank you so much.
So much fun.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.